Hey Twim, this is Josie Gleave. Happy Mother's Day to those parts of the world currently celebrating, and to those women who truly feel joy on this day. For others, it's more of a roller coaster, or maybe even totally depressing. I'm back today with more interviews, thoughts, and questions about motherhood. So whatever you're feeling, I hope this helps. This is Motherhood, Part 2. Genesis 32, Jacob is said to have wrestled with a man, or an angel, or God, depending on who you ask. He is blessed, receives a new name, and continues on his way with greater wisdom. There are many interpretations of this story. I like to think of it as a metaphor for answering questions. If I put in the effort, I too might continue on my way with greater understanding. There are two motherhood experiences I wrestle with a lot. Some women do not feel a natural desire to birth their own children. They wonder, is it okay to choose not to? Some women struggle with infertility, and in a cruel twist of humankind, whose nature is to want what they cannot have, these women yearn for children even more than before. If womanhood is defined by motherhood, the woman who does not want and the woman who cannot have, equally but differently, feel like they are flawed. Where is that craving, an animal instinct to reproduce, a woman's nature to nurture? Or what is wrong with this body that defies biology and cannot provide what the heart desires? The difference between the two lies in a choice. Trying to have children is a righteous desire. Choosing not to is considered ungrateful. For example, how can I reject giving birth when so many women are unable, as if somehow using my healthy body to have a baby would make the other woman feel better, even though it wouldn't change her situation at all? Both of these motherhood experiences are a little taboo. To the woman who says she does not want to have children, she's told she will eventually change her mind. To the woman who cannot get pregnant or suffers a miscarriage, no one asks because they don't know what to say. Sometimes we forget that we can just listen. So let's do that. Let me introduce you to Sam. She is originally from Adelaide, Australia, and has lived in Melbourne, the Philippines, Sydney, and Brisbane. Her first degree was primary school teaching, but she's since returned to university a few more times to support her varied professions. She and her husband Dan have been married for 4 years, and 7 months ago, Sam gave birth to their first baby girl, Ayla. Sam and I bonded when we were both young marrieds without any children. I remember the moment I got married, this pressure to have kids settled in, but I knew it would take me several years to get to that point. For any woman who has felt lukewarm or even repelled at the thought of having children, they learn this isn't a topic to mention at church. There's no written rule for this, of course, but it is assumed that a woman's selfish desires are holding her back. Her priorities are not in line with God's will. Maybe, but nevertheless, those feelings and questions remain. Sam has asked those questions and felt those feelings. I asked her to explain how those emotions changed and developed in her 20s and into her 30s when she got married.
There must have been something that I liked about kids for me to want to study primary school teaching. After doing that for about 5 years, I kind of thought, you know, I didn't want to keep teaching. I couldn't see myself being a mother and being a teacher. I felt like I was giving myself all day, every day to other people's kids. And I thought, I'm not sure that I could continue to do that and then have my own children and come home to give what I wanted to be able to give to my own children. So that was my late teens and in my early 20s when I was studying and I started teaching. I'd never really had a strong desire to want to be a mother. I'm the eldest of 5 children. Not that I was strongly against having children, but I just never really felt like I had that desire that I think, you know, a lot of girls or a lot of women have. I guess in a way as well, with my younger siblings, I was responsible for a lot of like helping them out. And so some ways I felt like, I mean, I know it's very different, but I felt like I'd helped to raise some children already. I actually kind of felt like going through my 20s, I would have probably been content not to have any children. The church culture is so strong on families that I guess I kind of thought by the time I turned 30, maybe I'd be married and maybe thinking about having a kid or something like that. But I never still had that really strong desire to have my own children. And it wasn't probably until I turned 30 and then I wasn't married and I hadn't even thought obviously about having children, then I suddenly thought, oh, okay, well, what's my life going to turn out like? And then I started to think about looking back, like maybe when I was older, like looking back over my life and thinking, what things had I done? What things had I wished I'd done? And I guess around this time when I was in my 30s as well, I was already dating my husband, like dating Dan. And he is probably like the cluckiest man I've ever met in my life. he says that if he had have got married younger, he would have wanted 8 children. So I was married at 32. So around 30, you know, like my early 30s there, I was, I guess, looking at the relationship that I had with him and thinking like, he's really clucky. And if we get married, he would want to have his own children. And is that something that I'm prepared to do? Because I wasn't really looking forward to it. And I guess in my head I went back and forth a bit of like, I really love this guy and I want to be married to him, but do I want to have children? Like, you know, is it like if we get married and then don't have children, then he's going to be disappointed. But if we get married and then I feel like I'm forced to have a child, sort of thing. Not that I feel like he would have forced me to have a child, but obviously like he would have wanted me to do whatever was going to make me happy. But just that in my head, you know, the whole feeling of like, well, I knew he wanted children when I signed up for this kind of thing. When we got married, I think the fact that we had like, we seemed to have dated for quite a while longer than everybody else wanted us to date. They wanted us to get married in like 5 seconds. That it seemed like it was a while even for us, like I guess that we'd been together before we got married. And it was like, oh, okay, this has finally happened. We've like this thing that we've thought about, we've finally got married. And so then it became a bit real for me about like, oh, well, I guess maybe I'm actually going to have a child now that I'm actually decided that I want to marry this guy, then I am married to this guy. So I had a little bit of a freak out, I think, in the first couple of months after we got married, where I was just like, oh my goodness, what have I signed myself up for? But he was very patient with me because he was just like, whatever you want, like I want you to be happy, like, and if it ends up that we don't have any children and we'll both, you know, we'll talk out about what's best for us and we will make a decision about what's best for us. So just feeling that he was going to support me no matter what my decision was going to be really helped me, I guess, to come to terms a bit more with like, okay, I probably could have a baby.
So one of the things that you had mentioned was the church culture does focus on a woman's call to become a mother. How did you feel like sitting in either Relief Society lessons or just different church talks, hearing that, but then feeling like you were lacking that desire? Was that something that caused you some stress or anxiety?
Yeah, I guess a little bit, like not overly where I felt like I was feeling guilty or anything like that. But I guess in some ways I kind of questioned myself. Like you said, it is such an important part of the doctrine and it's such an important part, I guess, of the whole plan of happiness is families. So I was like, well, why don't I feel like I want to have a family? What is it about me that seems to be different to maybe what it is in other people? Like why? Or maybe, like, I guess I felt like surely there must be other people who feel like I feel. Surely not everybody is 100% like just raring to have kids. But it wasn't really something that people spoke about. Like it seemed like people were always super excited when they were like pregnant and looking forward to having this baby, and they were super excited about it and they were looking forward to having, you know, big families or, you know, even not big families, just having their own children. And for me, I guess I kind of, when I would think about having my own children, I didn't feel the excitement that I felt like everybody else was feeling. But then I guess sitting through lessons, like in Relief Society or, you know, wherever, like hearing talks, when they would talk about mothers, I guess one of the things I always felt that, especially in Relief Society lessons, there would always seem to be an emphasis on, well, you don't actually have to have your own children to be a mother. And in some ways I felt like, oh, well, you know, that's people who can't have children, you're just trying to, you know, make them not feel so bad about it. But it actually, yeah, it actually felt for me like, okay, well, if I don't have children, if I decide not to have children, or if I'm not feeling I'm super excited about having children, there's other ways that I can still be a mother in a sense, like experience a lot of some of those same like experiences with helping to raise children. And like I've got like a couple of nephews and a niece, and I had felt totally content just helping to look after them before having my own daughter.
But then I am very curious if the feeling that you, like the feelings and the emotions and the growth that you have now having a baby of your own, how does that compare to what you felt like, as you said, where you helped raise your other siblings and now you have nieces and nephews or maybe other younger cousins? Like you have a lot of family around you that you could have always kind of helped to mother and to raise. But is that really the same thing?
Well, I felt like it was the best bits of it in some ways.
Okay.
You didn't have the sleepless nights, you didn't have to, you know, change nappies, you didn't have, you know, like all of the hard stuff.
Oh, so like, you were literally just looking for the good bits.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much.
I get it. Okay.
You know, whenever I would go, like my nieces and nephews don't live in the same city as me. They've never lived in the same cities as me. So whenever I've gone to visit them, it was always great because they were super excited to see me, and we would do special things together. Like, you know, I'd have dates with my nephews, like we'd go to the park or I took them to the movies, or, and I'd let them choose things that they wanted to do. And so I felt like I got to have these really nice, fun experiences with kids. But then at the end of the day, I always got to hand them back and have my 8 hours uninterrupted sleep. And yeah, it was great, like in that sense. But I guess like looking on it now, like, I don't know, I guess it is really different having your own child because you can't hand her back to anybody. I mean, not that I would want to hand her back, but, you know, sometimes it'd just be nice to hand her to someone so I could, like, go to the bathroom in peace, or, you know, have more than 2 hours in a row of sleep or something like that. But, yeah, it is different because even though my nieces and nephews obviously, like, were super excited to see me, like, and they loved the time that they spent with me, looking at how Ayla looks at me and about how like excited she is and how she finds comfort with me and like I'm the center of her world, it's just a totally like different feeling. Yeah, it's, I mean, some people have said to me like, oh, once you have your own child, you'll never be able to imagine life without them. I don't know if I quite feel like that. Like, I can imagine what my life would be like if I didn't have her, and I think I would have still been pretty content and happy. But now that I have her, I mean, maybe in the first couple, like month or two, I was like, can I just put her back? Like, because she was hard work at the start. As all babies are hard work at the start.
Yeah.
But yeah, now, like, I sort of think like, well, I do get a lot of joy from having her, and she is hard work, but you know, if I didn't have the hard work that I have with her, then I wouldn't get to experience the joy that I have with her as well.
What is something you didn't expect from motherhood?
I don't know. Like, I guess the feeling of that love, like, I guess is what I didn't expect. Like, I totally expected that it was going to be hard work. Like, I'm a realist in a lot of ways, and probably in terms of like thinking about being a mother, like that, like thinking about pregnancy and thinking about motherhood, I was maybe more of like a, I don't know, maybe looked more on the negative sides of what, how it could have been. So I guess I was prepared for the hard work, but I guess I wasn't really prepared for just like the feeling of love. I mean, and that's taken a while to grow. I wasn't a mother that saw my baby instantaneously and thought, I'm so in love with this tiny human. And it probably took me a good 4 or 5, maybe longer weeks till I felt like I could actually say that, like, I really loved this baby, which sounds, I mean, a little bit sad when I think about it now, but I feel like, you know, I had to get to know her and she had to get to know me. And although I had been carrying this baby for, you know, 9 months, it wasn't until she was, like, on the outside that I felt like I really had a way that I could connect with her. And so it took a good few weeks till I really felt like I could say, yeah, you know what, I love her.
It's nice, though, the way that you kind of describe that it can be gradual. There are some women that just seem so natural about motherhood. And, you know, the moment that they're either pregnant or the moment that they give birth, they're just so completely in love with this child. And that's always felt like such a big expectation. What if you don't instantly feel like this is the greatest thing that has ever happened to you? Is there something wrong?
That's a little bit how I felt, really. I guess partially because I wasn't really looking forward to being a mother. Not that I wasn't looking forward to it, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't have that real desire for it. That I kind of felt like once I decided to have a baby, I was hoping that once I got pregnant, that something in me would change, that I would suddenly feel different about it, that I would feel like I'm happy, like I can't wait to meet this child, I'm so excited about it. And throughout the pregnancy, I didn't feel like that. Like, I actually felt bad for Dan, because knowing how excited he was to be, you know, when I told him that I was pregnant, he was like so excited. And I knew that he was so excited about the whole pregnancy. And I felt like in a way he almost had to hold back his excitement throughout the pregnancy, because he knew that I wasn't feeling the same level of excitement as he was. But as I neared the end of the pregnancy, I was still feeling like, this excitement hasn't hit me yet. Like, why hasn't this hit me? Ayla was overdue by 10 days. And once I got to that, like, overdue point, everyone was like, oh, I feel so sorry for you. Oh, that you're still pregnant. And I was like, don't feel sorry for me. I'm loving this. Like, I'm getting bonus days, you know. Like, I was happy about the fact that she hadn't arrived yet, because it gave me more time, I guess, to prepare for it. I was quite lucky in that I feel like I had a good pregnancy. Like, I wasn't really sick. I wasn't uncomfortable. I was sleeping really well right up until the end. I was lifting weights at the gym up until a couple of weeks before I was due. But, like, I felt really healthy and I felt fine. Like, I didn't have any of those aches and pains. And maybe if I had experienced that, I would have felt differently. But because I was still feeling really good, I was happy that I was getting bonus days. And I was and in a way, I was happy about that, but I was still kind of giving me that time to try and mentally prepare for what was to come. Like, I knew it was ticking down. Like, there was a date by that. If she hadn't come by this date, then she was coming out no matter what.
What do you understand about the eternal nature of motherhood?
I guess, like, when I think about my baby and thinking that I want to protect her and I, you know, how much I love her now and the things that I want to teach her and help her to become in this life, and thinking, like, I'm so glad that I get the eternities for that as well. And also, I guess, hearing stories of women who have, it's maybe a little bit sad, but when they don't get the chance to raise their babies because for whatever reason they lose their baby during their, like, pregnancies or in their, like, when their baby's really young, or, you know, I know of a few women who have lost their children when they have been quite young. And when I think about if that was to happen to me, I mean, it's devastating, but at the same time, I feel that hope of knowing that, you know, I know that she's at least mine forever. There's a reassurance that comes with knowing that whether I get to have her now or whether I get to have her later, she's mine. And she's always going to be mine.
I really appreciated hearing Sam's experience trying to connect with Ayla. I think many women have felt that anxiety, wondering what would happen if I don't instantly feel a deep love for my child the moment I meet them. Sam said she assumed that once she got pregnant, her feelings would change, that she would finally enjoy the same level of excitement other soon-to-be mothers portray. But it still didn't come for her. Even right up to the birth, she was still trying to accept that she was about to become a mother. If a woman decides not to have children, she has to have a good reason. An alternative plan detailed in a spreadsheet, preferably, with highlighted columns and goals of how she will use her time to serve, study, and work. You can't just say, "It doesn't feel right for me," without the follow-up of, "What will you do instead?" A woman without children is perceived as a threat. What is she doing? What is her purpose? In 2011, Elder Neil L. Anderson gave a talk called Children. In it, he confirmed that the biblical commandment given to Adam and Eve to multiply and replenish the earth still stands for us today. Although, in my more resistant moments, I think this request is vague enough that it's possible God was actually requesting us to plant more trees. It seems like there's really only one choice here. A woman is supposed to have children. If she doesn't, we assume she will regret it. Or if she doesn't, oh the horror. What kind of a woman is she? I cannot count the hours I've wondered about this. What happens if you die and are greeted by the spirits who were supposed to be your children? Do they get reassigned to a family of 10 in the middle of Montana? Or perhaps to a royal family where they are fawned over in pastel jumpsuits until they grow into adulthood where they inherit generations of male pattern baldness? When Sam said Ayla was hers forever, would she still have been hers if Sam chose not to give birth in this life? In speaking with friends, members, local leaders, many say it is such a personal choice, implying, yes, it's okay not to have children, but you didn't hear that from me. But from general church leaders, the answer seems like a pretty clear no. Above all, we have agency, our right to choose, our right to turn to God and try to understand what is best for us. But there are still consequences. How can a woman catch the vision of her calling? Is it solely up to personal revelation to determine what her call is? The second motherhood experience I wanted to explore deals with similar questions of, is there something wrong with me? Infertility creates a very real sense of shame that your body isn't operating as expected, and a new level of aching pain you get when the thing you want so badly feels just beyond your grasp. Kristen was born in California, but considers herself from Tokyo as she was raised there from the time she was 3. It was the start to a life as a global citizen and her love of living in a place where she's out of her comfort zone. She has since lived in Taiwan, where she served her mission, the US, London, Uganda, India, Paris, Afghanistan, Singapore, and now Malaysia. She is a yoga teacher and has degrees in sociology and international development, which led her around the world working for NGOs. Kristen married her husband Will when she was 26. They now have 3 children, boy-girl twins who are over 3, and a 6-month-old baby girl, all of whom she got pregnant with through IVF. The experience for her was often one of disappointment and frustration.
Pregnant or have kids, so we're like, okay, well, maybe halfway through Afghanistan, then we'll start trying. So already at that point, it was kind of feeling like we were going to start trying when, you know, I was 28, getting closer to 29, and in my mind, I had like all these deadlines, like I want to be done having kids at 35, and I'd like to have a kid by, you know, by the time I'm 30 or 31, ideal, you know. And we come from like highly fertile families. So we are like the first people to ever not get pregnant, like in the first month, basically. So like my husband's 1 of 10, I'm 1 of 6. Most of the people around us like get pregnant on accident.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fully instant. So we are like the outliers there. It wasn't even like on my radar fertility stuff at all, right? And I also come from like a very natural mindset. So the fact that we went all the way to IVF is like, it was a pretty intense journey for me mentally too, to be like, I tried all the holistic things. I was just trying to figure out an alternative way, but still have kids. And we started trying in Afghanistan, and there's a lot of factors that could have been at play for stress, for example, to have it not work out in Afghanistan. So we went back and settled in DC, and a few months, like I would say like 6 months in, I was like really antsy. My husband's very like go with the flow and everything's going to work out. And I'm much more of like action oriented. Let's like get things done. So I like was feeling a lot more deadlines than he was. And you feel it every month when you get your period and it's a big disappointment, and you are really in tune with your cycle usually when you're trying, at least trying for a while. And there's just like this buildup every month that gets really taxing emotionally, I feel like.
So did you ever get an official diagnosis?
We are unexplained. That's our official. Which is, I mean, it's kind of,
oh my gosh, that's way worse.
Yeah, but it's also like there's a lot of things. If there was like a hard diagnosis, there's nothing you can do about it either. Whereas unexplained gave like a little wiggle room for a miracle, right? Which is good and bad, where you're like, well, maybe something will just work out and line up. So
I don't know. I think it's harder to accept.
Yeah, I don't know. It was hard, I think, either way with the diagnosis, because then it could be like, if it's male issue, that's like a huge hit for that ego. If it's a woman's issue, that's a huge hit for the woman's ego. So it's almost better to have it be ambiguous and not be like, well, my husband's sperm aren't getting us, you know, or whatever. So it almost,
so you're sharing this equally.
Exactly, which is kind of better than being like, knowing that it's your bad. I like,
right.
Yeah.
Was there a point though where you sort of just accepted, okay, we're probably not going to be able to naturally conceive?
Yeah, I think just as like the time went on, to this day, that's definitely like the hardest trial, like emotionally with my faith and with my relationship with God. Like that experience has been my like hardest thing that I've ever had to go through. And I don't know if it was for my husband. I don't think it got to him as deeply as it did for me, you know, where he was like, it's fine. Like God is obviously there listening and he wants what's best, you know, where I was just like, if I pray really, really hard for this any longer, I'm just going to be so disappointed when it doesn't work, you know? I was like, this is such a righteous desire. It's part of like eternal progression. We want to have a family. And I would love to not like go through all this like pain and money and hormones. Can you just give us a little miracle and let us get pregnant? You know? And I was like, I feel like this is a totally reasonable ask. But so it did kind of, and like we had some family members and friends, like so many people were like, I fasted for you guys, I put you on the temple like roll, and I was kind of like jaded by the end, where I was like, thanks, but I don't know if anything like is really getting there, like for whatever reason this is taking forever, you know? And so in hindsight, I still don't totally like, I haven't fully made sense of why that's one of our things that we had to do. But I do think it really helped that I decided that I was going to just own it. And because I was open about it, I've been able to really, really deeply bond with a lot of friends that were struggling, but wanted to struggle in quiet. But they still needed one person that they could talk to that understood. I've been able to like really feel close to other people that are struggling on that. And that is really like the only obvious bright spot of like why maybe we needed to have that. Also, I mean, we would have never had twins, so maybe they needed to come down together. There's so many people that that's not where their story ends, and then they have to do more and more and more. And so I'm so grateful. I'm one of the lucky ones, you know, in that regard. So that's when we had my older two twins. And then with Gwen, we were moving to Malaysia, and I was like, I would like to have another baby, and it didn't happen for 6 months. And so I just knew, I was like, yep, if we're going to do this, we're just doing IVF again. And luckily we're in a country now living in Malaysia that they have really good quality of care and it's really affordable. I even actually had a better experience here.
I'm curious if you feel guilt that you went through this process and you have eventually been successful just because you keep saying, I'm so lucky, or I'm the lucky one. Is there any of that feeling of being in that world and knowing so many women who it just doesn't happen?
Yeah. I mean, my empathy goes far for people in the fertility world, but I only experienced it to that point, right? And I haven't experienced then the positive pregnancy test and then the miscarriage, or like then the like four failed IVF attempts. And I think cultivating gratitude is healthy, but I do also just like yearn for these people that are still trudging along in that like darker part of their journey. And I just like want them to get out of it. I want it to work for them so bad.
I think that many people don't know what to say if they suspect a friend or acquaintance is struggling to get pregnant. There's this idea if, you know, a woman's over 30 and she doesn't have kids yet, then there must be something wrong. But I don't want to ask because it's too personal. And I worry that this keeps the women who are suffering and those who are struggling with this issue, that they endure it in silence. How does someone ask?
For me, it's like you do need to be close enough to the person because it is personal. And some people, even I know people that didn't even want to talk about it with their family. Like they just wanted to keep it between them and them, their spouse. Because they wanted to hold it that close to them. So people can sense sincerity. They can sense like true caring. And there'll be times where you do want to open up and you might need to cry or just confide in someone. And then there's other times where you just want to put on the brave face because you're worried you might break down or cry if it's like really raw still, right? Just ask how they are. They'll decide how far they want to go.
I don't know if there's a delicate way to put this. I wonder about all of the emotions and the sadness, the disappointment, and the pain that comes from trying and trying and trying again. Essentially, I want to know, why is it so devastating? Is it because this is a righteous desire? You are trying to follow God's plan and that this is your highest calling to be a mother, and yet your body isn't doing what it's supposed to do. Is that where the pain comes from? Is it a yearning? What is that feeling like?
For me, it was definitely like this yearning. There is like this point of just kind of being run down with hearing the same messaging over and over that's just not working out for you, even though you're trying to exercise your faith and you're trying to do the best you can and you're trying to like check all the boxes to get these huge blessings that are supposed to happen. I knew that somehow or other I would be a mom, like I would adopt or whatever it needed to be, but I was hoping that I could also like carry a baby and like do that experience as well. I allowed the weight of my intrinsic desires, but also the cultural pressures and the doctrinal stuff. Like it's really clear about like needing, you know, how eternal family is like the core part of our religion. And so all of that really wore, yeah, it was really tiring.
How is a woman's fertility connected to her worth, do you think?
I think that they shouldn't be, but they are in a way. It's just like the people that don't fit in the mold. If you aren't like a heterosexual male, female, that are then gonna quickly have kids, have this like little nuclear family. They're all raised in the church. They're all baptized. They all go on to have missions and temple marriages. If you like break any of those molds, then it's hard. And you question if there's something fundamentally wrong with you or why God would give you that trial when it's so straightforward. And of like the formula, right, to success and eternal family. And I think those are great goals, and it's a good standard, but there's so many of us that like don't make the marks at each step. My husband just like simplified it enough to be like, no, we're like in a fallen state. Like our bodies aren't perfect. We're in a fallen state. It just is what it is. It's going to come with stuff. Like some people are going to get cancer. Some people are going to have fertility issues. Some people are going to have other things because we have imperfect bodies in an imperfect world, susceptible to all these things. And it just is what it is, you know? And so if you can simplify it to that, then that's great. If you elevate it to say like my intrinsic value as a female is to reproduce, then it wears more heavily. So I would kind of fluctuate between those two mindsets of being like, no, let's just attach. It's just something that happens to people, you know, don't take it personally. And then other times I took it personally, you know, so.
It's one thing to hear that and your brain knows it and you understand it. And then your heart feels something totally different. How do you reconcile both of those and get them to match up?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just like a little bit of a ping pong back and forth always, you know, just trying to find that, like the space between and just kind of hovering in the ambiguity.
Appreciated listening to Kristen's experience because it was new to me. Our emotions are shared by many women, but unless you've lived through infertility, you're unlikely to hear what the experience is like. Along with Kristen's gratitude that she's been successful with IVF and as a result been able to birth 3 children, you can still sense her frustration reliving those years of disappointment. I was surprised that it seems like she's still going through it. I assumed once IVF is successful, you'd instantly feel like it was all worth it and forget the pain. No doubt Kristen does feel like it was worth it, and yet some of the pain, confusion, and questions remain. Why did she have to go through that? The usual response is so that she could share that experience with others. I can accept this to an extent, but honestly, in moments of despair, it hardly seems like compensation. Near the end of our conversation, a word came up that I repeatedly hear and read the more I explore motherhood: nurturing. The woman as the primary nurturer has been used as a cop-out for why there are not as many women in leadership positions in the church. And outside of the church, nurturing feels almost like a weakness. A person is rewarded for hard work, being strong, pushing boundaries, things that have monetary value, staying at home and loving your children, while admittedly all of those things, is unfortunately not included in the definition. How then can a mother feel like her efforts are valuable when her key role, to nurture, is either used as an excuse to keep her at home or is simply not counted? There must be something wrong with this approach, as it seems like what was supposed to be a mother's power has been degraded or even used against her. Value is something I will investigate in greater detail next week in the final episode of Motherhood. But to finish off, I wanted to understand what am I missing about nurturing? What is so great about it? Kristen explained to me that the power of nurturing is knowing that there is someone who loves you and they are pouring it out on you. Is this what President Nelson referred to when he said, "No one can do what a righteous woman can do. No one can duplicate the influence of a mother." I remember hearing that and thinking, fantastic, we have a unique power. Is this it? Nurturing. It sounds like charity, the pure love of Jesus Christ, the greatest of all the gifts of God. I don't think you need to birth a child or several children to be a woman of charity. I don't expect church-wide policy or clarification that, yes indeed, every woman must have children as soon as possible. Maybe they know what God knows, that women are close to Him and it is our decision to make with the help of our heavenly parents. I think that there is a time and a place for each woman, that wanting to overcome infertility and wanting to wait can both be righteous desires. Not everyone has to agree. That's the whole point. You can have your own wrestling session to figure it out. But I think we can agree that God has a plan for each one of us, and yet He operates off of His own timetable. Perhaps one of the hardest things we will face in this life, along with the feeling like we don't always fit the mold, is to continue to have faith when God's plan and timing does not match our own.